And here in Matthew, the 23rd chapter, beginning in verse number 24, he said, "You blind guides," and then verse 25, "Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, and hypocrites! You may clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but within are full of extortion and excess." What I want to emphasize here is they had an outward image, but the inward one was extortion and excess. Go down to verse number 27, and within is, it says here, is uncleanness. And then in verse number 28, inside are hypocrisy and iniquity. So to the people, if the people viewed these Pharisees, they were impressed by them because they had all the outward appearance, and they certainly looked like they were living up to what they portrayed, but that's not what Jesus said. And in Luke 11, verse number 39, he added one other thing to this. He added they were full of ravening and wickedness. Now that's kind of an ugly picture, really, of what the real man was all about. So we have, as I pointed out, we have a public image. We have an impression that people get from us, but it may not be the real person at all. And I think the aim and the goal that we're really shooting for and should be shooting for and should be aiming for as Christians to be sure these two images match. That's where the really difficult part comes in. As I've pointed out, we're really dealing with two areas. We're dealing with doctrine. And when we understand the truth and we accept the true doctrine, that's an important aspect of it. But what if we accept the true doctrine and we go along with that, but then we don't do the other? So, you know, that's why Paul said you'd better take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. So the responsibilities that are laid upon us to live up to it and to change the inward man, it is a formidable task. It's very formidable. In fact, it's really far more difficult than accepting the doctrine, because accepting the doctrine is a matter of God opening our eyes and minds to understand it and see it, and then overcoming what difficulties the world may present to us, like keeping the Sabbath or things of that nature. We go ahead and accept the doctrine, but this struggle, this inside, this other aspect is a formidable task that is a lifelong endeavor. So what does the inside really need to be? That's the question we want to answer here. What does it need to be? Well, first and foremost, it needs to be an inside that manifests true love. I'm talking about what the Bible calls agape. That's a Greek term. That means this really true love of God as opposed to philios, which is this brotherly love, which is a lesser degree. And if you stop and consider the way human beings love, almost always, there are a few exceptions, of course. Maybe far more than what I'm going to even concede here. But the fact is that most human love tends to be selfish because it is a representation of, in other words, a person they love and the things they love and the things they dote on are things that are associated with the empirical self. And I think a very good definition for true love is just love in general. That is, it's outgoing concern for other people. Outgoing concern. A sincere outgoing concern. And, you know, I'd say if we reach that point, we've come a long ways. I'm sorry I do not have the Moffat translation with me today. I didn't bring it, because it renders this 1 Corinthians 13 in just an absolute magnificent manner. We have so many words that have been translated from the Greek into English in the 1600s, and many of those words, of course, so many of them have changed, the meanings have actually changed, many of them are almost obsolete, they're not used anymore, and some of these more modern translations really capture the senses, we would understand it better. But here we have the word charity in 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter. So Paul's giving this description of charity. This, in other words, love would be a better way. Professor Moffat translates it love. And so here's what it is. In verse 4, it suffers long. That is, it's long-suffering. It's patient. Very, very long-suffering. Now, I think most of us, that would vary, I guess, on the circumstances, how hungry we are, how much sleep we have had, who we've been associating with, who's rubbed us the wrong way, and that type of leisure. It may be very short, but it should be long-suffering. And we read here, it's kind. It doesn't go out and be insulting. It doesn't try to be a super critic and go around all over the place finding fault. That's not love. That's just nothing but carnality. So it's kind here, and it does not envy. It isn't competitive. And it does not vaunt itself. That is, it's not vainglorious, extolling the self. And it is not puffed up. That is not, it's not inflated. It doesn't have a big opinion of itself. Years ago, when we lived down in Nashville, Tennessee, we went to the Grand Ole Opry a couple times. And a lot of folks, they don't realize how talented those country music stars really are. Because what we see, you know, we think of country music as just hokum and low-class stuff. If you go down and see that Grand Ole Opry, and then you compare them with the local yokels that play country music, they're in that class all by themselves. That's why they get there. And people love that particular type of music. You know, it's not my particular bag necessary. I learned one thing down there, that Roy Acuff knew one song. The Great Speckled Bird. Every single time he appeared on the Grand Ole Opry, he sang The Great Speckled Bird. Somebody else told me later, no, he knows too. He knows I'll Fly Away. But anyway, Marty Robbins was on it. And, you know, we got to see him in person. And I tell you this, if you listen to his songs, you know, like that one El Paso, and, you know, that was really a classic for a country western song. And then you see him in person. Ugh, we couldn't believe it. They'll stand back behind the stage. The reason I know is because we had a man in the local church there who was one of the top sessions guitarists in Nashville. And what does that mean? That means that all the music that was played and made in Nashville, he was one of the backup guitarists on that music. There were about a half a dozen of these men, and he was one of them. And he told me they'll stand behind the stage there at the Grand Ole Opry. They'll argue who's going to be last going out, and they'll actually come in late to be sure they're the last one going on the stage, because the last one going on the stage gets the most acclaim. Marty Robbins came out there, and he'd sing his song, and he'd play the piano, and he'd smile, and he'd say, "Give it to me, give it to me." Well, if I'd have had a tomato, I'd have given it to him. It is not vainglorious. That's human nature, to be vainglorious. And it does not behave itself unseemly. You know what that means? It's not rude. Now, how many times do we get irritated and boy, or rude just like that? And it does not seek her own, and it is not easily provoked, it doesn't go around with an irritable attitude all the time. Now, I know people, I'm not going to mention any names, but when they come down for breakfast and they haven't eaten all night, all day or all night, boy, they're irritable. Sometimes I look in the mirror and see myself. So, you know, irritability is another mark of just this lack of love. And what this really telling you here, you read all these descriptions here, and I can tell you, boy, that's why I say it's a formidable task. It's a formidable task. It does not think evil. That is, it doesn't impute evil. Often you'll find people, they have a certain concept about something, and then when they see something or they hear something, they'll read into it based on how they're evaluating it, what they think it means, and that may not be the intent behind it at all. And they immediately think the worst thing. It's imputing evil. That's not love. And then it does not rejoice in iniquity. That is, it does not rejoice in unrighteousness. And it rejoices in the truth. That's what gives it joy and happiness. And it bears all things, or meaning it contains all things. And it believes all things. That is, it believes the best of all things. It thinks the best of people. Now, you know people and I know people. Whenever they think of someone, they don't think the best, they think the worst. And I know people, on the other hand, when they think of someone else or some other circumstance, they think of the best of them. They don't think of the worst. Well, I can tell you, the person who is thinking the best is the person who has love, or has a greater degree of it than the person who doesn't. And charity, that is true love, it never falls. It just fails here, but in other words, it fails is a good way. And then it goes on to describe these other things. So that gives a pretty good description here of the inside. Now, there's only one way we can benefit from these things, and that is if we can be evaluating them and then honestly saying, where do we fit in the category? I think if most of us will be honest, we have to admit we have a long way to go. We have a long way to go. Now, here's another aspect of what the inside, we're talking here about what does the inside need to be. It needs to be humble. It needs to be humble. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 9. Deuteronomy chapter 9. And we read here in verse number 4, speak not in your own heart after that the Lord thy God has cast him out from before thee, saying. Now here's what he's telling them. He's telling them they'd better be humble. Because he's telling them, you didn't cast them out by what you did. For this is what they're going to be thinking or saying. For my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. It's not why he brought them in there. Here's why. But for the wickedness of these nations the Lord doth drive them out from before you. Not for your righteousness or for your uprightness of your heart do you go in to possess the land. So, you know, we have to look at ourselves with respect to the truth. Why are we here and the other people aren't? Because we are so righteous, we deserved it, and we're good, and we're better than other people. You know, I look at all these other churches of God out there today, you know, they're all watered down, and I'm just thankful I'm not one of them. Now, what made me stay here, and they go there? I know ministers, many of them, knew them as close personal friends, who all compromised. I saw them doing it. Why am I here and they are there? Well, why are you here and you're not in one of those groups? Well, it isn't because of our own righteousness. Because he said, as he goes on to say here in this fifth verse, it's because of them. That is, these other nations. Deuteronomy 15, verse number 15. Here's what he says. You get up there in the land and you accrue to you the power and everything I'm going to give you, and you're safe from the nations about you, then here's what he tells them. You shall remember that you were a bondman in the land of Egypt. Don't ever forget that, where you came from. It's amazing to me how many people will find success in life, and then they'll go ahead, and then they just promptly forget all of the background and everything they came from, and they become absolutely unresponsive and inconsiderate toward those in those stations and categories of life. What does the inside need to be? It needs to be humble. And that's what we need to be striving for. Have we achieved it? Of course not. How long will it take to achieve it? Probably a lifetime. Probably the same things we're struggling with now we'll be struggling with later, hopefully to a lesser degree. But here in the book of Micah, Micah chapter 6 and verse number 8, what is he has showed thee, O man, what is good and what doth the Lord require of thee? To do justly. That is to be fair in your dealings with others. Don't try to cheat and take advantage of anyone. And to love mercy, to be considerate, and, you know, the easiest thing in the world. To make a decision or a judgment on something you think about someone, but you're not in the circumstances, you don't know. And then to walk humbly with your God. Don't ever get the idea that you have all the answers and you're Mr. Bighead and you know right and you know wrong and you're superior to other people. That is not love. That's just nothing but carnality. And, you know, we have it to a greater or a lesser degree. Isaiah 66 and verse number 2. He tells here, you're not going to build me a house. What are you going to build me a house for? That's what he told David. I don't need a house. But he said, nevertheless, because you have this desire, and it is out of great respect and reverence for me, I'll go ahead and allow you to build that house. I won't allow you to build it. You've got too much blood on your hands, but I'll let your son build it. Then he says here, where is the house that you'll build unto me, and where is the place of my rest? Isaiah 66, verse 1. Verse 2, for all those things have my hand made. All those things have been, saith the Lord. But to this man will I look. This is a man that I'm going to pay heed to, I'll listen to, and I'll have respect for. To him that is of a poor and of a contrite spirit, and trembles at my word. Trembles at my word. Yet I can tell you there are people by the millions today that say, well, yeah, I know the Bible says that, but now here's the way I look at it. God's not going to pay heed to someone like that. Romans 12, verse number 3. I say this through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. The of himself, of course, is in italics, but I'd say the general principle is the same. In other words, if you have somebody who has what he considers highfalutin thoughts, or he has a very inflated opinion of his intelligence quotient, then he had better think soberly. You know what the word soberly means there? Notice what your margin says. Sobriety. It means realistically. Let him be realistic. Let him think realistically. The problem with so many people, they're not realistic in their thinking. And so they have an opinion, an idea about this and that. It's not the truth. Well, that's why we need to realize humility is important. Next. We saw there in the description of love kindness, to be kind. Notice Proverbs 19, verse number 22. Proverbs 19, verse 22. So many of these words are written at the time the King James Version was written, and they don't have the impact they really ought to have today. And a much better translation here would be, the desirability of a man is his kindness. That is, what makes a man desirable is his kindness. If he's a kind man. Proverbs 31, verse number 26. Proverbs 31, verse 26. Here it's talking about this, what is called a virtuous woman. And it says here, she in her tongue is a law, the law of kindness. Well, you know, a woman can either make a man, help a man to be successful or ruin him. That's really true. That's why it tells you in the book of Proverbs, you're better off to dwell up in a corner of the rooftop than in a broad house with a nagging woman. We had an elderly lady back in Springfield years ago, and she had a favorite saying. She would always advise young women. She'd say, a woman who has any horse sense is not a nag. Here's a law of kindness. You read that whole description here of this woman here, and it's quite an order to fill. Because, you know, women are human too, and they get irritated and they get upset, you know, and things bother them just like it does every man. And we all have this thing we've got to struggle with together. Matthew 25, verse number 34. Actually, I won't read the whole section here. I'll just read verse 40. I think that summarizes well enough. Most of you are familiar with this text. He says here, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of these, my brethren, you have done it unto me. Now, who do you consider the least? Would you disparage the least because that person is not, in your eyes, important enough? In the sight of God, I'll tell you this, everyone who's been called to the knowledge of the truth is important. Very important. And they should not be disparaged. But there are people that are that way. You know, they want to cater to a certain level, and they don't care about the others. That certainly is a weakness, and a certainly reflection on a lack of kindness. And in Ephesians 4, verse number 32. You know, sometimes you'll find people who will just appear out of the blue, and they'll just really be a benefit to you. Because I was on the way up to Seattle one time, and I tell you, if you've ever been through that nightmare, God help you. I've gone through that thing, and I tell you, every single time, you start hitting about Olympia, and before you get into Tacoma, and then it's just bumper to bumper all the way till you get to Edmonds, and about 5 miles out of Edmonds, it's bumper to bumper 5 miles an hour for the next several miles. I mean, you cannot get through that place without getting in a traffic jam, and I mean, it is a mess. And I was trying to figure out where I was going to stay that night. I was under stress there, and we were at a rest stop, and all this fellow just comes up out of the blue, and he's sitting there talking to us, and he must have overheard our conversations. I mean, he said, look, I'll tell you what to do. He said, number one, he said, get over here in this lane that's got the arrow, the diamonds in it. He said, that's the commercial lane, and if you have more than one driver in the car, that's a speedy lane. So that's the first thing we did. Then he said, now, see this box over here? Go over here. Here's all these motels here. You can just, they got their numbers there. Call them up and make a reservation in advance. I don't know who he was. He just appeared out of the blue, and he was really a benefit. Nobody paid him, or nobody in any manner, shape, or form encouraged him, and yet he just came up and did that. I don't know who he was from Adam. But it shows you what a benefit people can be to others. Ephesians 4, verse number 32. Be ye kind one to another. Be kind one to another. So that's what God puts upon our shoulders. And that's what he expects of us. Colossians 3, verse number 12. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercy, kindness. Why does God tell us to be kind? Because I can tell you, many human beings are not kind. You grow up in a household where you have been allowed to do nothing but fight with your brothers and sisters. You grew up that way. And it's often true that you'll find the youngest child of the family is the most aggressive and the one who fights the most, because he's had to fight against the older ones all his life. You know, any responsible parent will see to it that that's not permitted. I knew a man down in California a number of years ago, and he and his older brother, his dad would actually allow them, they'd get into an argument, and he'd allow them to go outside and fist fight. And he told me later on in life as an adult, he said, that was one of the worst things my father ever did. We should never have ever been allowed to do that. That's where these things are. It's in human nature to begin with. And then if you get in a frame of mind and you're just always bickering and arguing and wanting your way, and you develop this aggressive spirit and attitude, are you going to have any kindness in you the very moment something comes up on the scene and challenges you? Of course not. 2 Peter 1, verse number 7. 2 Peter 1, verse number 7. Here it's talking about these building blocks we're building upon as we are building character and attaining God's kingdom. And right here in verse number 7, it says you're to add to this godliness brotherly kindness. So that certainly is one of the things that should represent the inside. That's what the inside needs to be. Next, it needs to be considerate, not full of criticisms. When I was in the Army years ago, I had a buddy of mine, and if you'll pardon me for using this expression, but I think it was rather descriptive, he used to say to me, Clark, you'd bitch if you were hung with a new rope. Isn't that true of us? I've known people, you have too. Everything that goes on, they got something to gripe about, to complain about, to criticize. Is that love? They're too busy criticizing everybody else instead of looking at themselves. Consideration. Consideration for people. Consideration for the circumstances. Consideration that people may know a lot more about something than we do. Consideration that there may be all kinds of facts that enter in that we don't even know about. That's an important principle to keep in mind in the understanding what the inside should be. Romans 14, verse number 15. Here's another example of it here. Romans 14 and verse number 15. If your brother be grieved with your meat, now walkest thou not charitably. What he's saying here is, if you're doing something offensive, doesn't make any difference what it is. There's absolutely nothing in the Bible that prohibits eating meat, the eating of meat. And Paul said he wouldn't eat it as long as he lived if it were going to cause a brother to stumble. So if we're conducting ourselves in some manner, or we're doing something that someone finds offensive, then what are we supposed to do about it? Conduct yourself in a proper manner. Don't be a stumbling block to someone. Destroy not him with your meat for whom Christ died. Some people are so touchy and sensitive about things that you've just got to be aware of these various areas where people become offended. And that's why Paul said, if you have faith, exercise it yourself before God. You don't have to make a big issue out of something publicly. but it certainly represents what the inside ought to be. And then as we read in verse 1 of chapter 15, we then that are strong ought to bear the infirmities of the weak and not to please ourselves. Paul said all things that are lawful are not expedient. And they're not. Doesn't mean that we can't do them, but we just have to recognize that people are not in the same level of faith. They don't have the same understanding about things, and so we've got to be careful how we conduct ourselves. Matthew 7, verse number 12. That's what Jesus said. This is the rule right here. Matthew 7, verse 12. Therefore, all things whatsoever you would that men should do to you, do you even so to them. We call it the golden rule. Well, that's the golden rule of Christianity and the golden rule of living. But the golden rule of this world today is that he that has the money, he that has the gold makes the rules. But the true golden rule is right here. How would you like to be treated? 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse number 8. Finally, be ye all of one mind. That's what the church is striving to attain. And having compassion one of another, love as brethren, be pitiful, be courteous. We have books still available today. There was a very well-known etiquette book that was used for many years. And for some reason, the name of the lady slips me. Most of you probably would think of it right off the bat. But you know what etiquette rules are? They're rules of consideration. Manners, good manners are nothing more than being considerate for other people. That includes all kinds of areas. That's what consideration is. And Leviticus 19, verse number 18. Even in the Old Testament, we find these principles emphasized. Jesus, of course, expanded them very greatly. But as you read here in Leviticus 19 and verse number 18, you shall not avenge. Years ago, when I was a young man out in Washington, D.C., I attended, they had a couple of pro basketball teams, the Spas against the Boston Celtics. And I remember it very well. And they do these warm-ups where they jog in, you know, and throw the basket. The basket guy throws the next one. You know, you've seen that where they come in from both sides and they're dumping the basket. And some young pro, he was fairly young. You can see this older guy, he was older and quite a bit more experienced. He threw the ball at him and he threw it so hard it went through his hands and hit him in the face. Boy, I saw this older guy look at him, boy, like daggers. They went on around, threw the thing two or three times, and finally gave his, he got the turn to throw the ball to this young guy. Boy, I was watching him. He threw that ball so hard, boy, just almost knocked this young guy down. Carnal nature, just absolutely carnal nature, vengeful. He thought, I'm going to teach that young whippersnapper a lesson. Yeah. You shall not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of your people. Clear back in the Old Testament to these carnal people, he said this. So as you see what we're talking about when we're talking about consideration, what we're talking about, learning to be considerate for the feelings of others. And then next, compassion. Compassion. You know what compassion is? It's trying to put yourself in the place of the other person and to imagine what he's going through. And then being in that position, how would you like to be treated? That's what compassion is. Proverbs 21, verse number 13. Proverbs 21, verse 13. Whoso stoppeth his ears at the cry of the poor, he also shall cry himself, but shall not be heard. You know, the poor need compassion. Sure, I know a lot of the problem in the United, there's a number of very, very serious social problems in this country, and they're not going to be conquered. They're not going to be solved until Christ returns and sets up his government. Then people, they find out the root cause of these social problems. They look at every single thing except what? human nature. I'd say if there's one major flaw in the entire world today, in every single thing that's done by man, it's the inability or the refusal to own up and acknowledge what human nature is. So you have all of these psychiatrists and these educated people that are giving all kinds of explanations for what they think human nature is, and they don't know anything. They certainly reject the Bible revelation. You know who your own worst enemy is? It's your own nature. So people have a tendency to look down on a lot of these people. I tell you, when I really began to realize what a poor dilemma many of these people are in, because when I lived down in Nashville, you know, of course at that time it was far more integrated, but it still is integrated today. It's integrated economically, but it's a lot freer today than it was then. I went out and visited these housing projects, and after a while I could see there was absolutely no way they were ever going to get out of that project. There's no way they could raise the money. There's no way they could buy property. There was no way they could ever get out. They were stuck. That's just the way it was. They could not better that. You know what most young black men do? They don't get into drugs and lawlessness of one type or another. Then they'll drive themselves to achieve great things in sports, and they'll get to colleges, and they'll get out of it by that means, or they will go into the military. They got a clean record. And they usually do quite well. But we have all kinds of people on these welfare rolls and these government programs. It isn't helping them, not really. So there is a proper place for compassion. I don't say to the place that you have this liberal ideology and they're going to solve everything by just doling out more money. They're not getting down to the root cause of the problem. And I can tell you the root cause of the problem is religious. That's where it is. If the people in the United States were being told the truth today, and they were getting it as much as they're getting all the lies they're hearing, maybe they'd be a little different people. Zechariah chapter 7. Zechariah chapter 7, verses 9 and 10. Thus speaks the Lord of hosts. So you know, God even considered our behavior and actions in social problems, not the way the world tries to solve them. Execute true judgment and show mercy and compassion every man to his brother. Now, who's your brother? You know, Jesus gave the example of the Good Samaritan. And he showed who the man really was who loved his brother. This Samaritan didn't know this injured man from Adam, but he took him and looked after him, bound up his wounds, put him in a hotel, paid his fare. He said, if I owe any more, I'll pay it when I come back. And he said, that's who really loves his brother. So that's why it says here, we'd better show mercy and compassion. Keep in mind, of course, that means good common sense. According to the circumstance we may be in, you know, we don't want to be one of these foolish people, which has been known to happen. They'll go down to the ghetto or to the Skid Row district and start walking up down the street handing out $100 bills, and then they find them knocked in the head in the alley. You know, you have to use good judgment in everything you do, but there is a proper place for all of these things. Compassion is certainly a factor, and it is certainly a factor toward one another. 1 John 3, verses 17 and 18. Whoso has this world's goods and seeth his brother have need and shutteth up his bowels of compassion from him, how dwells the love of God in him? Now let's keep in mind we're talking about legitimate needs. We're not talking about people who, I call it their OPM. They're an OPM man. That is, they operate on other people's money. We had a fellow that came over to our former affiliation and started hanging around. He had a very, very serious condition of diabetes, and he was taking insulin shots. And he managed to get on the dole somehow. And to make a long story short, we found out this was his vocation. He went around from church to church here and there, and this is what he did. He went here a little while, and he lived off of it. And he went to this one, lived off of that one. And one day I had the doorbell ring, and there were two men standing there with suits on, and they said, we'd like to talk to you. And I said, well, what can I do for you? And they said, we belong to the postal, we're postal inspectors. may we come in? I said, come right in, be seated. And they start asking me about this fellow. And apparently what he had done, he had used the postal services in some manner of fraud, where he was offering things, genealogies and this type of thing, and then he wasn't coming through, and so they were looking for him. And the fellow talked about him, and he pulled out this picture, and they absolutely had a drawing of him. Somebody had drawn his picture, and it looked just exactly like him, except he had two heavy jowls here. I said, yes, that's him, that looks just exactly like him, but his jowls are too heavy. Well, I don't know whatever happened. I never heard if they ever caught up with him. So, you know, there are people like that we have to be on guard for, but I'd say this, certainly when it comes to anyone who's deserving and someone who may be in circumstances that is not his own making, and certainly someone who's willing to put the effort out, you know, like it says in the Bible, it says, if a man don't work, neither shall he eat. And actually, Greek should read, if a man is not willing to work, he should not eat. So there are people who will do that. That's what we need to be on guard for. But certainly, as it says here, where there is a legitimate need, my little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed and in truth. That's exercising compassion. And then one other area here, Galatians 6, verse number 1. Brethren, if a man be overcome in a fault, you which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Now, does that mean everybody who Tom, Dick, and Terry decides he's going to go out and correct someone else because he sees a fault in? Who classifies you as spiritual necessarily? You know, that's talking about someone who truly is. If you do, you'd better do it, as it says here, in a spirit of meekness. Sometimes you have to be firm, of course. You better realize that, you know, no matter who we are, we can also come to these things, you know. We used to hear, you know, this is my peculiarity, what's yours? Everybody has a flaw, a series of flaws. We all have imperfections of one type or another. So what gives us the right? You have to be careful about that. All right, next. What I call compatibility. Are you compatible? How many people get married, and they get married on a whim? You know, it's like that Johnny Cash song, we got married in a fever hotter than a peppered sprout. We've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out. Yeah, that's exactly what happens. They get married in a fever, and then as soon as the fever wears out, they find out they're not compatible at all. So now we have all kinds of divorce decrees being granted today on the basis of incompatibility. Can't get along is what it means. Well, can we get along? If we can't get along in the church, how in the world are we ever going to get along in the kingdom of God? You know, if we're a family here, if God has called us and made us a spiritual family, and we're a family in the church and we can't get along in a family, what makes you think we'll be in the family of God? That's why this is a testing and the proving ground. If you can't do it here, you can't do it there. That's why Jesus said it. If you cannot be faithful in the little things, you cannot be entrusted with the big things. What in your estimation, in your mind, is the littlest thing that God requires of you? You better think about it twice. You can't be faithful in that. You can't be entrusted with a greater riches, Jesus said. And certainly getting along is one of them. Colossians 4, verse number 6. Colossians 4, verse number 6. Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. You know what that means? You don't insult people. You think about what you say in advance. And you ask yourself, how do you think they'd respond? You take their feelings into consideration. Always liked the example that one of the ladies at the Spokesman's Club gave one night, because we had them as guests. And she said when she grew up, her daddy taught her that you can get things done either by using vinegar or by honey. And she found out you could get a whole lot better results if you use honey. How true that is. Romans 12, verse number 18. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. What he's really saying here is you'd better really make an effort to get along with others. If you don't make an effort to get along with others, you won't get along with others. I remember a man years ago, he would go to this minister and he didn't like what he heard. He would go to the next minister and he'd say, well, I have a personality conflict with him. Then he'd go to the next minister and he didn't hear what he wanted to hear, so he'd say, well, I have a personality conflict with him. And finally, when he got to the third or fourth minister, the last one told him, you know something? You don't have a personality conflict with these men. Your personality conflict is with Christ. How true. How true that is. So if you don't make an effort to get along, you know, it's the easiest thing in the world to get into an argument. Mark 9, verse number 50. Mark 9, verse 50. Salt is good, but if the salt have lost its saltness, wherewith will you season it? Have salt in yourselves, and have peace one with another. Learn to be compatible. The last point I will cover is, we're talking about what should be on the inside. It should be an attitude of service. An attitude of service. Are we all perfect in that? No. Should we strive to accomplish more in that field? Yes. Notice here Hebrews 13. Well, let's go to Hebrews 6, verse 10 first, and then we'll go to Hebrews 13. And this is a place, by the way, if you want to use those new bookmarkers. Hebrews 6. And verse number 10, for God is not unrighteous to forget your work and labor of love, which you have showed toward his name, and that you have ministered to the saints and do minister. You serve in what capacity you can. And it certainly should be without competition. The problem in the past was we had this idea that you had this hierarchical rank system and you got up to this level and boy, then you were striving for the next level. And boy, if you didn't get to the next level, you'd really be disappointed. It was climb up the ladder. And that whole thing is as ungodly as anything could be. Those so-called ministerial ranks are not ranks at all. They're offices of service. That's what they didn't understand. I remember sitting in conferences. Mr. Armstrong would talk about not lording it over one another, just realizing that we're all servants, then just promptly everybody was lording it over one another. I had an evangelist come out to my house one time, and boy, he took me to task for my child rearing. And I thought my wife and I were the worst failures that ever lived in the matter of child rearing. I got back to Pasadena, went to his house, saw him and his children do exactly the same thing. That's when I realized, boy, this thing's a sham. So you just have to realize that what God wants is service, but it's not from a point of view you're going to have some exalted office where you can lord it over others. Hebrews 13, verse number 16. But to do good and to communicate, and that word communicate would be much better translated, and to fellowship, or the word constantly given, the variations given in the Greek are to share. To share. To do good and to share, forget not. Share your time, share whatever you can give, whatever you can do. That's what service is. And then as we saw here, when Jesus was talking in Matthew 25, verse 40, remember what he said? Well, let's go back and read it, because it is a good example here. Matthew 25, they said to him, verse 38, when saw we thee a stranger and took thee in, or naked and clothed thee? And when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? He told him, you did this to me. And he said, well, when did we do it to you? They were shocked. He said, inasmuch as you'd have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you've done it unto me. That's how he views it. Notice what he says. Inasmuch as you have done it to the most important of these my brethren. Is that what it says? To the least of these, my brethren. Who's the least in your eyes? Well, then you've done it to Christ. And in closing, Galatians 6, verse number 10. Galatians 6, verse number 10. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them which are of the household of faith. So you see, we have the outward man and we have the inward man. What we should strive to do is to be sure that the outward man is the same as the inward man. When we've done that, then we will have achieved what God wants us to.